Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace.
I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Omar Ramirez. Omar is an experienced advocate and advisor. Hi, everyone. Today, I'm with Omar Ramirez. We've been introduced by Danielle, who's been on the podcast very recently, and I'm quite excited to have him because we had a really good first introduction call. So hi, Omar.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for coming on. I like to start with kind of setting the stage and introducing you to the audience. So what is your job today?
My job today is definitely different than it was a year ago, which is very exciting. My job today is I have my own consultancy called Affordances, and we use design thinking to help people solve experience-related issues for their companies. And that could be anything from creating a better strategy for your workplace to creating a foundational strategy for your company about how you're thinking about your total ecosystem of employee experience, essentially. And then we help companies find the right partners to help kind of take that strategy forward and move it into the future.
So who are your typical stakeholders then within organizations?
I think with Affordances, I typically think of our stakeholders as the employees, right? So the entire purpose of Affordances has always been to improve experience for every company and every person at those companies. I think when you think about like the project stakeholders or the outcome stakeholders, those would typically be the executives or the founders of the companies if they're a younger company. I think those people are typically the ones who hold the power and hold the decision-making power. But we do say that, you know, from a product standpoint, I kind of think of like experience as a product and your end users are your employees. And so I think like that's the way that companies need to be thinking about it.
As you've mentioned, you've been in another place like a year ago and worked in corporate real estate for many years. I'm sure we'll tap into that a little more. But I do know as well that that has not been your professional background to be a corporate real estate manager. What was it?
So I went to, my original degree was in religious studies, which is really looking at religion from a historical perspective, how groups form, how communities form, and how they form beliefs. And at the same time, when I was at college, I actually was a facilities manager or facilities coordinator offsite at a facility. And I was running buildings for the school as a resident director and building houses with Habitat for Humanity. And I, through a combination of these things, once I graduated, I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my career. And then I realized there was this nascent world called facilities management, which no one had ever told me about facilities management when I was growing up. But my mom was a residential broker at the time. And I kind of put things together and realized that was something I wanted to do. And so I applied for the lowest level possible job, which was a great place to start, actually, a half-time mailroom, half-time facilities assistant for a company called Eura Services, and worked my way up from there. So yeah, it was definitely not my original path, but it has led me to different disciplines that I've kind of fallen in love with over time. So I found out that space planning was a discipline, got really interested in move management and logistics, and was doing large-scale moves of 500, 700 people at a time, which was very exciting. Then I realized that I could actually help build the spaces. And so I got into, you know, project management and construction management and kept learning as I went along. And that learning path eventually led me to what I have now, which is a really, truly love of like product design and design thinking. And I am now earning my master's in industrial design because I'm an avid lifelong learner. And I do think this all kind of like runs itself together into the world of creating better solutions, and that human-centered design and design thinking can allow us to create better solutions. If I think, you know, one of the first books I ever read by Don Norman, he expresses this thought that there are no bad humans, there's just bad products. So every time you're frustrated with a product, someone didn't do a great job designing that product, possibly. You know, it's not necessarily that you're like a bad human. It's that someone didn't think of the human when they were designing the outcome for this product or the UX for this product. That really opened my eyes and kind of pushed me into this world of design.
I think that's the beauty of the corporate real estate world, that there are so many facets that you could dive into and specialize in, and that that movement that you just mentioned, like that seeing the office as a product as well, is like something that's like fairly recently only happening. Before, it was like always a resource of the company that was optimized. So that's a very interesting aspect to tap into.
Yeah. And I do think that this, you know, I think people speak about the pandemic as though like we've jumped ahead by 10 years or things have changed a lot. But really, a lot of these trends were already happening before the pandemic. The pandemic just accelerated them by 5 to 10 years, right? So like the acceleration of trends that were already happening has caught some people off guard. You know, the move to more remote work, other accelerations of like financial payment systems, et cetera. But I do think in the CRE world, especially thinking about a building as a product, or you know, the fact that we can't just design the same thing over and over again and think it's going to somehow still satisfy the future user of a building is kind of naive. And I think, you know, we got pretty happy with the state of the world during the boom times before the pandemic. In 2019, everyone's like, the train can't possibly stop. Like, we're just going. And the pandemic has kind of forced us to slow down and to be, but give, also given us the gift of time to think about the way we approach workplace and the way we approach work. And I think that's having a massive knock-on effect in the world of CRE, is that people are slowing down for the first time and saying, hey, could we do a better job? Could we build better? Do I have work-life balance? Like, people are asking questions that they wouldn't normally have asked if we hadn't slowed down.
Now, I want to throw a controversial thought at you that just came to my mind when you said you started in religious studies. Is the notion of bringing everyone back to the office similar to a religious cult?
You know, I've never thought of it that way, but that's a great question. I think that the idea of bringing everyone back to the office without even considering the possibility that remote work is better for people's lives, like overall, and like, you know, the caveat here being that remote work doesn't mean you never see people. Remote work just means you see people less and you figure out how to work asynchronously, which is beneficial for both company and human. I don't think it's a cult. I think it is a resistance to change, and change is hard. I think in the same way that, you know, there's this thing in psychology called reactance, and it's the human urge to protect their freedoms or protect what is theirs, right? Like, and resist change. Kind of the same way if you like, when companies tell people you're coming back to the office, no questions, no surveys, no anything, the immediate human reaction is going to be to do the opposite, and people will vote with their feet. And people have seen this already. There's attrition at companies that do this. I think in the same way, people at the top in executive positions and people who are protecting their financial outcomes, be it landlords, investors, et cetera, who want these offices to be activated, are having a reactance to the existing conditions in the market. And I do think that's a bad thing. It can seem kind of cultish almost, but it's like, it's more of like groupthink, I think, in that they're not considering that in the 2 years that we've had, we could have updated management practices, started refacing their buildings, thinking about, hey, maybe the old system of slumps, like small amount of retail on the bottom, all offices on top, doesn't work anymore. Maybe it should be retail, residential, office, and like think of it that way and think of it differently. I think people kind of sitting on their hands and waiting for things to go back to normal is a reaction to change. And you know, people don't deal well with change.
I'm sure you followed your previous employers and companies you worked for in corporate real estate. So I'm going to list them here because it's Netflix, Dropbox, Stripe, Atlassian. So a couple of very well-known names. And did you see differences in expectations towards workplace experience or workplace strategy in your time there and maybe now?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, now post-pandemic, in the endemic, as we move into it, there's definitely a difference in the way these companies are approaching their workplace experience. You know, Dropbox obviously has like very vocally gone out remote first. Atlassian has gone work from anywhere. Netflix has, I think, more of a hybrid approach in reality, where they have some people in some days and some people not in some days. And I think they're kind of figuring out what they're doing. Of course, they are more of a physical presence company because they have physical production going on as well. And being in that, you know, physical like movie production and TV production requires some physical presence. So a lot of their teams have been back on the studio lot, et cetera, this entire time, which is interesting. So they kind of are a little bit of a different company, I think, in some ways than like a Dropbox or an Atlassian or a Stripe for that matter. I do think that, you know, when I was at those different companies, each one approached their offices from a standpoint of what was best for their culture and what was best for their outcome as a company. I think some of them did a better job than others about thinking about the human side of that company or the human, like, you know, the actual humans who are like providing this, you know, intelligence and providing this human capital for them and giving them a kind of more like overall balanced view. I think it is difficult for companies when they're scaling really, really quickly. And, you know, like hypergrowth is a word that's used very often in the startup community. And hypergrowth can be really, really great for companies and for investors' bottom lines. But hypergrowth can take a really big human toll on people. And when you're moving in hypergrowth, you're working 68 hours a week. And in order to kind of offset that and give people some sort of balance, you need to have the systems in place of our overall employee experience ecosystem. And companies usually don't do that early enough. It develops over time. And that is something that I've been trying to do with affordances is to get those foundational pieces in place earlier to make the human experience of hypergrowth less strenuous and make it less hard on employees. Because, you know, even if you do, like a lot of these companies have taken a very good view of workplace culture. You know, for example, Netflix early on was very, very like open about taking down walls, getting people the things they needed for like productivity. If you needed something at Netflix and you said like, hey, here's a justification for it, here's why I need it, they would just get you what you needed. And the company was very open about supplying the things you needed to do your job properly and not really asking too many questions. You know, they were like, hey, we trust you. There was a huge culture of trust, like get the things you need, do what you need. Dropbox did a really great job on community early on, and they were very huge in the San Francisco area, but every place they went to, with really their offices becoming these massive community centers. And it was really a boon for them for recruiting because people would come, they would stay, they would invite their friends, they would all become part of this like nascent community. And then they would wind up working at Dropbox. And I think, you know, similarly, Atlassian, they expanded so quickly in the United States here, and they were able to build up a really great community very quickly because they had a very strong culture and they had very, very strong values that they lived by. You know, they would always say that the culture changes over time, but the values remain. And that, you know, the values stay the same, the culture changes over the time as the company grows. And that's natural. But I do think that, you know, as companies grow, there's this development that naturally happens for employee experience. But if there's, because there is a rote way that this happens now, there are ways to get ahead of it and put those foundational pieces in place earlier and make hypergrowth better.
You've mentioned Dropbox and Atlassian building, Atlassian building these communities and the hype around it. Do you think that would have been possible without the office locations in a remote setup?
You know, I do think it would be actually be possible. And I think that the reason for this is if you have the management processes in place, and I think of this as kind of like the oscillating ecosystem that we're going to be living in the future. I'm still thinking about the right thing to call this, but I think oscillating is probably the right word, where you think about like oscillation theory within like the context of the universe. Things go out, they expand, they contract, they come back together, hence the Big Bang. But I think that within workplace, you know, even if you're remote, you're going to bring people together and you're going to gather. And I think that that is a critical piece of any workplace culture, any culture in general, is the gathering portion, right? Like, where are we gathering? How are we gathering? When are we gathering? What are our rituals? And there's these religious words that are coming into the kind of workplace and HR context now, which I kind of find interesting, like rituals, norms, like the culture piece, the gathering piece. I do think that is partially due to architecture and design, partially due to the culture building kind of philosophy that we have now as people. But I think that you can build those communities if you figure out how you're gathering and why you're gathering. If you gather with purpose and bring people together to build those strong bonds, you can then send them off to the different corners of the world and have them still be like, you know, great quote unquote missionaries for your company. And they still represent the same values as your company. Just because somebody, you know, works from home doesn't mean they don't represent the values of your company in their community. They were doing that anyway, right? If you think about it, we all gathered at a you know, local HQ and then commuted back to our towns, probably like 2 hours, 1 hour, 2 hours away from our offices. And so that community building, I think, still is possible. I think it has to be more purposeful and more intentional.
Dropbox for sure thinks it's possible since you mentioned they did say all remote now. You've tapped as well into employee experience being at the start of it. And I think we hear a lot of times employee and workplace experience used interchangeably. How do you define those two terms and what contributes to them?
Yeah. So I think workplace is kind of, I think long-term, workplace will be used to describe a physical location. But the idea of a workplace, when you think about decentralization of things, I think the idea of a one workplace kind of makes no more sense because we can work from anywhere. Laptops, phones, this has been going on for a long time. But more and more as internet becomes, or good internet becomes more prevalent, it's easier and easier. I do think that when you look at the way that work is developing, I think of it more as the in like a holistic employee experience, and where we work and how we work is one part of that. So holistic employee experience, I think, is just one thing. And for me, that is the entirety of experiences an employee has from start to finish. It starts with your employee interview or your first reach out from a recruiter, and it ends the day you get exited or the day you exit the company, right? How a company sees you off. And Netflix did a really great job of this. We always used to say, like, at least when I was at Netflix, they used to say, like, Netflix was a great place to be from. Because I never met somebody who was at Netflix who didn't have a better job when they left. In that the culture was very supportive of people leaving the company. And the idea of it, you know, they had this idea of it being like a kind of high-performing sports team. And you never really met a high-performing player who left a team and didn't go to another team and do a great job anyway, right? So there's like this culture of seeing people off and being like, yay, like they're doing something else now. And everyone I worked with at Netflix who is not there anymore, has better jobs and are doing great things still. And I think that kind of supportive community is a great version of like a holistic employee experience. Are there issues with every culture at every company I've ever worked at? Sure, absolutely. No company is perfect. No culture is perfect. I don't want to make it seem like everything's super rosy at every company. It's not. And not every employee has a great experience. So there's definitely things that everybody has to work on. But I think thinking of workplace as a holistic or employee experience as a holistic viewpoint is the best definition of it.
You've had this interesting article out on LinkedIn on how binary bias influences workplace decisions. Can you elaborate on that one?
So I was reading Adam Grant's new book, Think Again. I love his writing, but I do try to, when I'm writing about workplace in general or employee experience or design thinking, I tend to read a lot. And so I tend to tie everything I'm reading, I tend to tie back in my brain, I think, to workplace and how does it relate to the physical workplace or the digital workplace or human experience. And so this is what I'm thinking about when I'm writing these things. But in his book, he talks about binary bias. And it's this interesting thing that happens where humans want to categorize things. We want to like put things into boxes and say good or bad, false or true. And that's how we like to think about things. And I think you see this a lot on LinkedIn or social media, where someone's like, oh, like this is a vote for the office, or this is a vote for remote, or this is like the, and you see all these pundits kind of appearing and saying these things, and it gets lots of likes and lots of shares, and that's great for their social media. But in reality, that's not really how the world works, right? You know, in reality, like life is a spectrum. If you ask people like, do you like pizza? There's going to be a spectrum of answers about, do you like pizza? It's not yes or no. There's nuance. What are the toppings? What is this? Like when you talk about remote or in office, people want to make it a binary conversation because the binary conversation serves their purposes. The advice I always give people when I'm talking to them about workplace, design thinking, the future of work, whatever we call it, is if you're reading an article, look up who the author is. Go a little bit deeper. Who does the author work for? And always kind of assess your information you're receiving and ask the question, how have I received this information, or who is putting out this information, right? Who's sharing it and why are they sharing it? And I think if you kind of start taking this more, and Adam Grant talks about this in his book, this more scientific approach to information and try to unlearn and learn new things and question information and question your own beliefs, I think it's a good thing for people to think about. You know, Dave Cairns, who's on LinkedIn a lot, kind of all over the place at this point in a positive way, is doing this a little bit and kind of questioning the CRE community and their kind of objectives and like thinking a little bit differently. And I do think that that is something that is, you know, I think great, because it's showing a different kind of viewpoint from kind of a more traditional sector. And I think that as we kind of move into the future, we're going to see a lot more of a spectrum of different companies. And I think this is the really great thing about the future of work, is that people will get to choose what kind of company they want to work at based on, one, the culture, the salary, their job type, and then also what kind of work arrangement they want. You're going to get to choose, do I want to be in an office all the time? Do I want to be in a hybrid situation? Do I want to be remote? And knowledge workers will get to choose this kind of setup for themselves. And I think in the end, that will attract more talent to kind of like tech companies, et cetera, because that's an amazing ability to have, right? If you said to me like, hey, like you can work remotely and now you can move anywhere, it unbonds you from a lot, you know, like depending on like your outcome or like what your objectives are. And it's given people the ability to do things that they never would have been able to do otherwise.
I absolutely agree with you that this is an incredible opportunity. On the other hand, I do get that for organizations, it is just a bit of a challenge to have this non-binary options, because with office or no office, they can plan with like, there's a variety of options. What do you do with that? And that's something organizations are normally not set up for, and especially CRE organizations not set up for this fluctuation in workplace desires. It's like, more, here's your office, there you go.
And I think that's the reason you have to. So I actually wrote a post about this a few weeks ago, was that the best thing companies can do right now, if you had a workplace plan, you could say, okay, we're remote first, starting immediately. It gives employees ease of mind, right? It gives you peace of mind to say, okay, I know what my setup is for the next 2 years. I don't have to worry about if they're going to call me back into the office next week because my kid's school still isn't working properly and everything else is still not normal. So it gives people peace of mind. Then you start surveying your employees and figuring out what they actually want to be doing in the future. How do they want to be working? What systems are missing? What systems are working? And if you start treating your employees like end users and asking them for critical feedback and reacting to that feedback, it's going to build a better camaraderie for your company, and it's going to build a better rapport over time for your employees, and it's going to give them the outcomes that they want, and they're more likely to stay. And I think that it is hard for CRE teams and workplace teams and, you know, the landlords and like the whole like spectrum of CRE, right? It's not an easy time right now to figure out what people need. We need to be building new products. We need to be building better solutions. And a lot of that is starting to happen. I've been seeing kind of trickles of this. There's a lot more kind of prop tech companies popping up that are forming right now, and a lot of different like technology companies. Canoa is one really good example of this. They're a company that is really kind of figuring out how to create a more sustainable solution for furniture procurement, et cetera, and designing like offices more creatively. And I think a lot of these solutions are things that I've seen coming up now, and they're solutions I wish I had in my early workplace journey that are now coming out and like being developed. And I think that's encouraging to me. You're seeing a lot of like different developments in the hybrid workspace. You know, obviously you talked to Danielle from Cafe, kind of working on location issues. And I think that that stuff that's happening is the beginning of a larger revolution in CRE, where we're going to react better to users and create a more dynamic future for spaces. The idea of a space being only one thing is, I think, kind of an old mentality. And I think that we can learn a lot of lessons from retail and hospitality in, you know, the workplace, you know, physical office workplace world, about turning spaces over time, changing quickly, flexibility and adaptability. Retail does this really well. And I think a lot of the lessons that retail has learned could be easily transferred to the physical workplace.
How do you see the purpose of the office then going forward? And I'm going to add to that, what does the office of your dreams look like?
I think the purpose of the office in the future is going to be a place to gather, right? I think it's a place to come together. It's more of a community center than it is a heads down work office. Are there people who are going to absolutely need that? Sure. And they can use it for that. But I think similarly, in the way that a community hub or a, you know, public library functions, in the way that like it brings people together, it can be used for events, it can be used for heads down work, it can be used to do research. I think when you think of it more from that perspective, I think the workplace really becomes, or the physical office becomes, a place to gather and build community. And is that one building called an HQ that's massive. I think a lot of that depends on the size of your company and like how, like if you're a 20 person team, that place could be a ranch in Idaho or a, you know, or like an offsite location in like California. Like it could be anywhere that you decide to gather. You know, people make community. A physical building can enable community and can enable certain activities, but it can't create the community for you. It can't create the culture. Physical space and good design enables culture or encourages certain habits. It cannot create it. So I think that's really important to remember. But I do think the physical office has a purpose and has its place. And now I've forgotten your second question, which makes me a terrible person.
What was your dream office? I mean, that was a lot to ask in one question. So.
I think my dream office would probably be, oh gosh, you know, I think it's a place that adapts and changes over time and that really can be used for any community. It's kind of like, this sounds like a really nascent thought, but you know, when I worked at Stripe at first, there was this space they had called Pioneer and it was in the Mission. And it had been used by another company. They kind of added floors over time and they really grew very organically in there and did adaptations that were sensible, but not crazy expensive. And they were like doing a really good job of living in the space. And I think in the same way that what happens a lot with companies, and this is the shameful thing about office, is that you move into a space, you demo out what somebody did 3 years ago, it all goes into the landfill and it doesn't work anymore. And so you put in something new and then 5 years later, the same thing happens. It's really, really wasteful. And I think to me, my dream office or my dream space, I guess, to put it in a different way, would be a space that is built for purpose, but flexible and can change over time like a good old house does, right? You know, there was this idea and concept that over time, like a house should adapt to your needs. Kind of the same way that, you know, like right now I have this office, but in another life, if we had another kid, this would become a kid's bedroom. And then in another life, it could have been, you know, like a playroom for like something else. And so I think, you know, houses and residential, we kind of accept a lot of different adaptations that have to happen. And I think in the office world, we often think, oh, we'll just tear out the walls and we'll tear this down and we'll just throw it all out. Whereas adaptation over time and change over time is so much more acceptable in residential. And so I think my ideal office is more like a house and more like a space that changes over time with the family or the people inside of it. Do I think work is a family? Absolutely not. I do think there should be somewhat of a division there, but I think you build a community space and your community space that changes over time. I think that's my ideal space. It's something that can like adapt over time and be smart about the way you're using resources and adapt to the people inside of it. I think that to me is my like long-term ideal.
I think a lot of the success that co-working spaces had in the past is kind of attributed to being good at creating this living room or homely experience that people felt more authentic than in their regular offices kind of. And that's why they got excited about it.
Yeah. And I do think that co-working spaces got a lot of things right. You know, I think what people get wrong about WeWork is that, you know, like everyone's like, oh, WeWork like exploded. It was a bad thing. But I think WeWork did a really good job. I mean, they built a massive company in no time whatsoever, a massive architectural practice, a massive interiors practice. They built a strategy practice. Like they built something incredible. And now I think, you know, they're doing a better job of righting the ship and figuring out what they're doing. And that's thanks to their leadership. But I think that co-working did get right that sense of community building and experimentation and figuring out what works and what doesn't work. And like the community sense there, I think, was because of the amount of different types of companies and different types of people who were in those spaces. And that's kind of like a diversity thing, is that you're getting diversity of thought and you get someone who's working on something and they see someone having a meeting and they like, they're, you know, those kind of, you know, to use the term that everyone uses, casual collisions, right? And you get these kind of bump in moments where you're like, oh, hey, I didn't know you're working on this. Like, that's great. And I think that those things can empower people to build stronger bonds in those communities. And then like, you know, they do then associate that with those buildings or with those spaces. I do think though that you can do that as a company yourself, but I think that the flexibility that companies are going to require in the future will require a complete re-envisioning and a complete rethinking of current lease terms. You know, 7 to 10 year leases for most companies is not the reality anymore. I'd be very surprised if lots of companies. Are there reasons for companies to sign those kinds of lease terms? Absolutely. Like if you're in a growing market, you know you can like in the future lease the space for more than you currently got it for, figure out the sublease market. Sure. There's a reason there's like you can do the math. But for most companies, a 5 to 7 year lease or a 3 to 5 year lease even is not going to be realistic. And I think that's hard. That'll be hard for landlords, especially because the flexibility in the terms. And I think that's, again, another reason why we need to rethink how we build spaces and how we design them, because creating that change over time and saying, okay, well, I'm only taking this space for 2 years. How do I invest in it in a way that's smart and get, you know, furniture and fittings, et cetera, for it without long-term destroying the environment more, right? You're not just going to like buy a bunch of stuff that you're going to throw it away, right? Kind of like everything that people buy on Amazon that just gets thrown in the trash, right? Like all these things, like all the packaging, et cetera. So I think, you know, in that way, we have to think about like a holistic change of how we do leasing, how we build spaces, how we design them, and think about like, what is our impact on the planet and what is our impact on the people inside the space?
Now you've mentioned as well, it's like probably not a good idea to just put in fancy stuff in an office and be like, okay, so here's your, I don't know, what's the prominent examples of the foosball table and the ping pong table and all that stuff. What I like as well is like free bagel day, or I don't know, the free food day in general are all ideas to attract people back to the office. What do you think companies can do wrong now in building a hybrid experience?
Oh man. I mean, I think first example of what you can do wrong is telling people what to do, not asking for user feedback. You have to ask for user feedback. That's table stakes at this point. You have to ask people what they want. I think they can, again, this is what they can do wrong. If you want to really mess up your hybrid experience, don't ask for user feedback. Don't give people benefits that actually like help them as humans or take a look at what they actually require. Again, this goes back to the user feedback thing, right? Like shiny benefits like a ping pong table, a pool table, a slide, et cetera. Just like nobody. Right now, nobody's thinking about that stuff. Nobody's like, gosh, I really got to get back to that slide on level two. They're thinking, gosh, I really wish I had better maternity leave, or I really wish someone would help me with my ergonomic setup at home because I've been working from home for 2 years and my back hurts. And they want, you know, like, I think the worst thing you could do is not put the work in. If you want to have a bad hybrid experience, don't put the work in. Don't put in the effort to change your management systems. Don't put in the effort to ask your employees what they need. And just do business as usual.
With an added layer of flexibility, kind of. And yeah. Organizing everybody themselves.
Yeah. Just let everyone do what they want. That's a great recipe for disaster. It is interesting because the formula to me seems quite simplistic. Of course, the execution is harder. Right? Putting the work in is hard. But in reality, we've had 2 years to think about this, right? And we've had 2 years to figure it out. Just at the start of the pandemic, I think it was April of 2020, I wrote a blog post and was talking about how like remote work is going to expand and hybrid work is going to expand as one of those trends, right? You know, so I think that I didn't think about how far it would actually go, or I didn't realize how far it would actually go and how much, partially because I didn't realize how long we'd be in this. But in the end, the habits form pretty quickly. And once we have formed habits, they form grooves in our mind that kind of makes them hard to break. So breaking habits is pretty hard. And like in Atomic Habits, this book that talks about habit forming, et cetera, there's a great example, like to create a new habit, you have to make something attractive, make it satisfying. And it's pretty hard to make commuting to an office more attractive than having more time at home, having more time with your family, and more satisfying than those things as well, right? So I think that is what kind of 100% in office is up against. I think hybrid is a reaction to kind of meeting in the middle, but there's bad versions of hybrid and there's good versions of hybrid. A bad version of hybrid would be like, you have to be in the office on Mondays and Fridays, mandatory. Because how do you actually regulate that? Do you slap people on the wrist? Do you do PIPs? Because PIP cultures are toxic. And I think that is that's going to be interesting for companies to kind of wade through. And this is what makes the work hard, right, is they have to figure out how to do this and how to implement it properly. again, I think companies need to think about like what their culture is and what their outcomes need to be, and then people will vote with their feet.
And I think what's difficult as well to cut some slack here is if you ask employees as a user of space what their dream office is, like with you, I think the majority of people will not be able to say, this is it. They would probably be able to say, this is not it, looking at their office, but saying like, I want this, 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 this. It's really hard until you present them with the option, and then they will use it or not.
Yeah. If you sit down in a design setting, and this has happened hundreds of times, I mean, the architects with executives, is you sit down and you say, hey, what is your dream office? People are like, oh, gosh, I don't know. I never really thought about that. Similarly, if you ask people what they need, the first answer you get is the simplest thing, right? You're like, we're pretty low on the kind of like hierarchy of needs right now as far as the pyramid goes. And people are like, I need a desk. I need a chair. And the things they know, the things they understand. This, again, is a common thing. It's called bike shedding, where people, if you ask them to build a campus or build like a building, they would focus on the one thing they actually understand in that thing, right? People know desks and chairs. And they're like, okay, I understand how this works. Or meeting rooms. Great. Like the meeting rooms need to be soundproof. They need a table. They need a conference room set up. And now it needs to be equitable because we understand that this is the way the world works in the future, right? Like one-to-one equity. But beyond that, it's really hard for people to think about what they need in an office. You need to put the work in and hire professionals to help you kind of suss that out and really get to the bottom of what employees' needs actually are. And that's why it is kind of not a one-year project. It's a 3 to 5 year project for most companies at this point to reimagine their workplaces. And they need to be open to the idea of iterative design. And this is something that happens a lot in design thinking and product design, is you prototype, you hypothesize, you prototype, you test, you gain insights, you build version 2, and you keep doing this. And this is going to be the next 3 to 5 years of any CRE team's life, is building these things over time and working with their users. Will their users change over time? Absolutely. Will market dynamics change over time? Absolutely. But you need to be continually focused and dedicated to improving over time. And that's all you can do. But if you do this openly, and I think if you do it and you communicate that you're doing this openly with your employees, they will see the benefit. And they will also be more open to the idea that this is changing over time. Like, are there things you have to nail immediately? Sure. But after you get those basics in place, it's more of like a change over time and providing the employee the things they need. And I think that iterative approach is the future.
And that's probably what's going to get people excited as well, that things are changing and not static like they used to be.
Yeah, I think flexibility and choice are going to be two very, very key viewpoints for the future of workplace.
I just remembered an episode where I was in a design session as well for a new office where we were relocating. And you said people imagining desk and chairs. And when we asked them what they wanted for the new location, the things they mentioned were actually not things within the office. They were practicalities like, oh, we need a hairdresser nearby and a beauty parlor. And oh, it would be great if the shopping center would be right next to it. So they actually preferred the locations that were within the shopping center, because then all the stuff that you could do was right next to it. So they didn't really care about the office itself. It was like, the amenities around it.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Clive Wilkinson, very famously the architect who did the original Googleplexes in Mountain View, California, had an article in NPR recently where he was talking about the downwind effect of building these campuses was that they put everything inside these campuses, which was a negative effect on all the other shops around them, right? And I think that in the future, and this has been a known thing within the workplace community for a long time. Like, there's obviously like, you don't want to build too much inside because then nobody goes outside and doesn't support the businesses that are supposed to be existing there, based on the idea that, you know, the city designed the building and they were like, okay, these shops around the building will support the people inside this building. That's how it's supposed to be. But when you build all these amenities inside, nobody uses those shops outside. And so they're not actually like frequented and they're not really doing very well. And I think that, you know, that kind of ecosystem standpoint, this is what people want, right? They want to be able to go to a place and have everything they need at their like fingertips, be able to go outside, grab lunch quickly, go like pick up their dry cleaning if they need to, if people still do dry cleaning, and do the things they need to do quickly and have those services around them. You know, we picked a place to live here in Los Angeles where I can walk to my barber, I can walk to the coffee shop, I can walk to the grocery store, and all of these things, like, we place ourselves in a way that like we can do those things. And I think that's how we need to be thinking about the buildings in the future, is as more of an ecosystem within a city, as opposed to like an ivory tower where everything's inside and the employees stay inside. And like, I mean, look, the idea that was originally behind creating all these things inside, which was increasing productivity, increasing casual collisions for the company, that stuff definitely happened. And it was definitely good for productivity. Was it good for the entire ecosystem of a city? I don't think so. If you look at downtown SoMa right now, I can tell you it wasn't. So I think, you know, it's, you know, SoMa in San Francisco is still very, very much vacant. And a lot of like retail businesses there have closed because it was focused too specifically on just office users and not focused on a holistic ecosystem that supports itself well. I think, you know, in some ways, Los Angeles right now is faring a little bit better because it is so mixed use, right? You have residential next to office buildings, next to retail, and next to food. So I think that has been a bit of a saving grace down here. And I think this is going to be different by region as well. But yeah, it's definitely more of an ecosystem now than it was before. It needs to be.
And there we're back at the rippling effects that corporate real estate has on many parts of, well, the real estate industry and the city planning as well, basically, and which nicely brings me to one of my closing questions, which is, if you could magically solve any future of work problem, what would it be?
Oh, wow. Gosh, that is a tough question. If I could magically solve any future of work problem, yeah, I guess it would be housing scarcity. I see housing scarcity as a future of work problem because people are having to move. And I'm looking at this from a U.S. local point, obviously, but this is happening in lots of places around the world. Even before the pandemic, the U.S. built 10% of the housing it needed year over year. I think in the 2 years previous to the pandemic, 2018, 2019, if I'm getting that statistic correct. And it hasn't gotten much better. And housing scarcity, like remote work in some ways, allows us to decentralize and allows people to move wherever they want. The problem with this is that then people are moving to smaller cities and increasing the cost of housing there for people who are already existing there. And that's creating downwind effects for those people, right? So like CRE has this, and you know, corporate work or workplace, whatever you want to call it, has this massive downwind effect on the, you know, the economies of cities all over. And I think that if we could fix the housing shortage and fix housing scarcity, it would open up, or housing affordability and housing scarcity both. I think it would just free up this entire world of a better future, and I think fix a lot of issues that are currently just creating massive issues for people who like can't have no solutions and have no way out and have no economic future because of these two issues. Like, it's kind of weird because like CRE is like such a big world, but I think that that is a CRE problem. And we have enough buildings and we have enough empty office spaces right now, you know, like millions and millions of rentable square feet that could be easily transformed into residential or some sort of apartments, et cetera, and still create a return for investors, but create housing for people who do not have housing and create better solutions. But yeah, I think that that is part of the holistic reimagining we need to have.
And then the very last one for me, who else should I have on the podcast? And is there a question you would like to ask them?
Sarah Escobar, who was previously the head of workplace experience at Hulu and then at Netflix, she has her own company now called Wheeling Workplace, and she is a fantastic future of work individual. I would love to ask her how she sees the future of office spaces and how that actually relates to sustainability. I'm going to load this question for her.
I've been throwing a couple of loaded questions to you right from the start.
So. Yeah, the cult question really got me.
Thank you for, well, still playing along and coming on this podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. This has been really fun.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.